Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to The New World next week, which, of course, you can find everything you need, sources, references, audio, video, and more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, we've had some epic episodes lately. And again, the news waits for no man, as they say. And I think there's so many moves being made on the grand chessboard that's it's kind of difficult to keep up. But yesterday, of course, was quite the large development as Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez dead at the age of 58. The vice president, now the interim president, Nicolas Maduro, announced the death on national television Tuesday, March 5th. I couldn't help but notice, James, a couple of lines below as I was just looking at different news headlines, that at that same moment, the Dow Jones in America was having its best day in 5.5 years. I can't see that as any sort of coincidence, and I think our first story will show that as we grab it from our good friends at blacklistednews.com. U.S. plots conquest of Venezuela in wake of Chavez's death. U.S. corporate financier-funded think tank, the American Enterprise Institute, the AEI, declared in its post-Chavez checklist for U.S. policymakers that the U.S. must move quickly to reorganize Venezuela according to U.S. interests. Upon its checklist were key demands: the ouster of narco kingpins who now hold senior posts in government, the respect for a constitutional succession, the adoption of meaningful electoral reforms to ensure a fair campaign environment, and a transparent vote count in expected presidential elections, and finally, and most importantly, James, the dismantling of Iranian and Hezbollah networks in Venezuela. However, in reality, the AEI is talking about dismantling entirely the obstacles that have prevented the U.S. and the corporate financier interests that direct it from installing a client regime and extracting entirely Venezuela's wealth while obstructing and even dismantling the progress and geopolitical influence achieved by the late President Hugo Chavez throughout South America and beyond. The AEI checklist continues by stating, quote, "Now is the time for U.S. diplomats to begin a quiet dialogue with key regional players to explain the high cost of Chavez's criminal regime, ... Of course, by all of these things, they're talking about putting in Wall Street-backed proxies like perhaps Enrique Capriles Radonsky and his Primero Justicia, that's Justice First, political front, two entities the Western media is already gearing up to support ahead of anticipated elections. So remember, you've heard it here. Look for those names coming. James will include in the related notes, of course, some of the other stories and just the straight up, you know, bio and obituary of Hugo Chavez. And on my Twitter feed at Media Monarchy, as we were looking at probably the imminent announcement of Chavez's death over the last couple of days, I had a flashback where Hugo Chavez said in 2011, the U.S. was giving South American leaders cancer. And also our friend Lauren Coleman at CopycatEffect.com today has a post: Hugo Chavez believed in reptiles. James, you can take any of those pieces you want.
Don't cry for him, Venezuela. I find it interesting now that a lot of people seem to be, or there seems to be a lot of defense of Hugo Chavez and his policies from a lot of the online alternative commentators. And I, for one, am not going to jump on that bandwagon. I don't think that the enemy of my enemy is necessarily my friend. And I don't have any really trunk for any socialist dictators in any part of the world. But for having said all of that, of course, Chavez has been a key block against American hegemon in South America for at the very least the past decade, and for example, standing up to the free trade area of the Americas, etc. So there have been some important things that have occurred because Venezuela has been that check on American influence in the region. So it will be interesting to see what happens in the absence of Chavez from that scene, and it would be naive of us to think that the U.S. isn't moving in right away with all of the networks and everything they've already established to try to get their people into power there. And I think there's going to be an incredible amount of movement on that front, and it will not take long for us to really definitively determine what's going to be the anointed candidate by given what coverage comes out of the organs and mouthpieces of the U.S. administration. So it's going to be an extremely interesting time here. There's a lot of speculation as to whether or not the cancer claims are have any validity to them, whether the U.S. really is using cancer weapons against leaders. Is it possible? It certainly is possible, but then again, if they have been trying to take down Chavez for the last 11 years since the failed coup, and this is the best they've been able to do, then it just goes to show how absolutely ineffective and ridiculous they are, in my opinion, if it takes them 11 years to try to slowly kill one leader with cancer. But at any rate, whether or not he died of natural causes or whether this was some sort of weapon or whatever it was, he's off the scene, and there's going to be a lot of money, time, and energy invested in this, because as I've been covering on the Eye Opener recently in the last few weeks, Latin America is an important and in fact a growing regional trade force in world politics, and I think it's much neglected, but it's going to be suddenly back in the focus. So as I say, there's going to be a lot of interesting things coming out of this, so we'll have to have our ear to the ground for all the latest news.
We were speculating yesterday at Ground Zero that, you know, he had maybe been dead for a little while. And isn't it funny that now we have to say, in all of these situations, it's like, well, regardless of maybe how it did or didn't happen, they're off of the world stage right now. We can read the stage directions and know that their character is being written out. And that's what it's like here on the grand chessboard. James, our second story is, as we take kind of a geopolitical look on this episode of New World Next Week, UN calls on Obama to publish findings on Bush-era torture, and we're grabbing this from allgov.com. A United Nations human rights official wants the Obama administration to release a government report on the Central Intelligence Agency's secret rendition program conducted during the George W. Bush era. Ben Emmerson, UN Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights While Countering Terrorism, noted that under President Barack Obama, the government has withheld important information on what he said were illegal acts committed by CIA agents. Many of the facts remain classified, and no public official has so far been brought to justice in the United States, Emmerson said in a report to the UN Human Rights Council. Speaking to that panel, he called the CIA torture program a, quote, international conspiracy of crime. Under Obama, Attorney General Eric Holder has decided to not prosecute any CIA official who was involved in the extrajudicial imprisonment and torture of terrorism suspects. Information on the CIA kidnapping program was collected by a Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, but those findings, collated into a 6,000-page report, were never released to the public, and Emmerson wants that report turned over. He's urged the British government to make similar disclosures pertaining to its role in the program and called on Lithuania, Morocco, Poland, Romania, and Thailand to conduct similar inquiries based on evidence suggesting that the CIA used their territories as black sites for torture. James, there's a longer and perhaps more hard-hitting piece from Russia Today that we'll also include in the show notes. UN demands prosecution of Bush-era CIA crimes, and we'll also include a recent piece from you, James, on criminalizing war clubs.
All right, a lot to pick up from there, but I think this is really an interesting conundrum, isn't it? Because there is no doubt that the rendition and torture program absolutely was an international conspiracy of crime, and it absolutely does deserve to be prosecuted, and Bush and all of his cronies deserve to be in chains and put into jail for the rest of their lives. And we all would very much like to see justice being done in this case. And we already know that Attorney General Holder and Obama will not prosecute, that this has all been swept under the rug, and it's not going to happen in the U.S. in any conceivable circumstance the way things are right now. So the question is, how can we possibly ever achieve justice for this? Do we have to simply give up? And of course, the temptation is to use some international body like the UN that has institutional legitimacy to, in order to enact some sort of international tribunal. And I don't know about you, but I'm not looking forward to the UN Human Rights Council starting some sort of international tribunal on this, because it is absolutely 100% run by the same interests that are running the United States right now. And even if we ever conceivably got to the point where they were trying war crimes of U.S. war criminals, I think it would just be part of a move towards the global world order that they've been seeking to legitimize and institute for the better part of a century now, at the very least, going back to the League of Nations. So this is an extremely important problem. How do we get justice for these international war crimes and for war crimes and crimes against humanity that will never be prosecuted within the U.S.'s borders? It is a real problem. There are different solutions. That is specifically what I'm going to be looking at on my podcast this week. So I hope people will stay tuned for that. And again, we have to keep working for justice, but I don't think the UN is going to be the way to get it.
So meanwhile, here in the States, all while this is going on, speaking of criminal Eric Holder, he's also just recently reaffirmed that, yes, it's okay for drones to kill you on American soil. It's no big deal. And as I speak to you right now, and it's still Wednesday, March 6th here in the States, Rand Paul is currently filibustering the approval of soon-to-be CIA head Brennan. So again, James, in all these situations, we want to go, yay, I'm glad they're doing that, but I don't trust any of these people doing it. It's kind of, it's hard to want to get up and cheer. And again, as if, you know, you and I are hardened old veterans to this, but we can't help but look at these things and go, yeah, I've seen these stories play out before, and it doesn't generally work out the way we want it to.
And again, the part of the point of this is they want to make us spectators. They want to make us just people in the stands that are cheering on other people who are doing things for us. And until we get into the mentality that we have to do things for ourselves, I don't think we'll ever be able to see justice arrive anywhere in this planet.
You're absolutely right, and I feel like I see that in just the huge amount of sort of sports spectatorship here in America. I think that's the perfect analogy for it. James, our third and final story continues the trend of looking geopolitically, but also continues our thoughts of criminals escaping justice. From Euronews.com, and this is fairly new news, U.S. cardinals cancel press briefings ahead of papal conclave at the Vatican. Instructed by the Vatican not to talk to the press, American cardinals canceled a press briefing ahead of preparations to choose the new pope. The briefing, which should have been at Rome's North American College, was axed because of concerns about details of confidential proceedings leaking to Italian newspapers, this according to a spokesman for the U.S. priests. The Americans were the only group holding daily formal briefings and had already held two. Although all cardinals are meant to remain tight-lipped, some are continuing to informally speak to the press. Meanwhile, there's still no set date for the start of the conclave, despite nearly all of the cardinals now having arrived at the Vatican. There's increasing speculation that the conclave may not start early next week, as had been expected. The priests will be meeting daily for talks over the next few days to determine the candidates and qualities necessary for whoever takes over from Pope Benedict XVI. The goal is to have the new pope officially installed before the Holy Week ceremonies, starting with Palm Sunday. James, an interesting note to tie into this, of course, too. Claims of corruption worry cardinals seeking answers on Vatican dysfunction. So, essentially, let's break all this down. For the first time in 600 years, a pope resigns, and they're saying, oh, he's old and he wants to step down. I think it's far closer to the reality that he's old and can't deal with all of the corruption and disgusting things going on that he knows about and that he's hid and all of his cardinal cronies have all helped to hide. So they're all basically getting together in their huddle and trying to figure out, how can we keep this game going without everybody finding out even more and more about how we systematically rape and destroy whole generations of people? I find it also interesting, James, that all these things will kind of culminate around the Holy Week. The same time, I think Barry Satoro is going to be in Israel for the first time. So a lot of interesting things coming up geopolitically, James.
Well, certainly some things to keep our eye on. I don't have a lot of insight into this. Speaking of spectators, maybe I'm a spectator on this story to a certain extent. I'm just interested to see how it plays out. But I was interested to see how the Vatican openly admitted that that Benedict was going to maintain his diplomatic immunity even after he gets kicked out. And the reason why he's living in the Vatican is so that he can't be prosecuted. So that's an interesting admission. I mean, I was surprised to see that even covered in Reuters as part of this whole retirement package that he's getting. But I'm more of a spectator on this story and just interested to see how this plays out. But what are you hearing? What's the scuttlebutt about prophecies and Petrus Romanus? What's coming from all of this? What do you think we can look forward to next?
We, of course, on the show I work for, Ground Zero, we do a lot of sort of paranormal and occult studies. We've done, of course, entire episodes on this new papal situation. And actually, I can include the best one of those in the show notes. I think we've made the prediction that it will be a guy named Tarcisio and not some of the ones that other people are predicting. I'm somewhat a spectator to this myself. James, if there's a way to sort of wrap all this up, like always, we can just kind of quote Saint Bill Hicks and look at, gosh, why are all these institutions and religions and all these things, they just all seem to be crumbling, and I think it's maybe because they're no longer relevant. So, James, if you and I are a spectator to the crumbling and destruction of destructive, corrupt forces and organizations, then, you know, I'll cheer from the stands on that one, I guess.
Well, we will have to see how it plays out. It will, at the very least, be interesting, so we'll keep it there. Of course, once again, people can catch you on Ground Zero Radio. You're a producer there, and you're on the air from time to time, so I hope people are tuning into that. And of course, you have all of your websites, Media Monarchy, Food World Order, and all the other ones. Do you have a few minutes? We could list them all. And of course, I'm at CorbettReport.com, and once again, my podcast this week is going to be on international law, so you can look forward to that. James, thank you again for three interesting stories.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.